Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is the EAL East Airlines Radio coming live to you with this breaking news.
For DC, just for tonight with breaking news number one, Operation Airdrop brings help from above. By Geoff Rappaport, Doug Jackson didn't set out to found the largest private disaster airlift operation in history. But Operation Airdrop took on a life of its own. Jackson, who owns a vehicle trailer dealership, was using some of his trailers to drive relief supplies to the Gulf Coast, and he got the idea to work with a fellow pilot and friend to coordinate relief flights by general aviation pilots. 12 days ago, Jackson was organizing missions on his cell phone with a notepad between flights. The Operation Airdrop Command Center collects data from pilots on payload capability, relief organizations, supplies needed, and donation of supplies available. You can see more in newsletter online, August to December 17th. Breaking news number two, Naples Airport cleanup begins, by Russ Niles. CEO of Naples Jet Center at Naples Airport in Florida told AvWeb he and everyone else involved in the cleanup after Hurricane Irma are writing a new playbook. None of us have ever been through anything like this before, Matt Higgins told AvWeb after meeting with airport and FAA officials at the airport last Tuesday. He said it could be 10 days before power is restored at one of Florida's busiest business airports. And in the meantime, the whole community is dealing with devastation it likely never envisioned. The level of damage to infrastructure, he said, is incredible. There are millions of trees down. You can see more in newsletter online, August to December 17th.
Breaking news number three, Sebring Lakeland Airport cleaned up, by Russ Niles. Airports throughout Florida are reporting varying degrees of damage from Hurricane Irma, and two most familiar to the pilots outside the state are cleaning up. Reports out of Sebring Airport are sketchy, but it appears that the site of the Sports Aviation Expo took a big hit. An email communication with AVED. Officials from Expo said the airport suffered devastation and that the airport officials were unable to take time to speak to us directly. The big need on Wednesday was fuel, and there were reports that aircraft could not get into Sebring. We'll have to do more details as they become available. At Lakeland Linder Regional Airport, Sun and Fun officials report damage, but nothing they can handle. See more news online, August, December 17th. Breaking news number four. Princess Juliana Airport severely damaged by Gulf Rappaport. Princess Juliana Airport in the Isle of St. Martin has been severely damaged by Hurricane Irma and Category 5 winds. Mayo Beach, where tourists take photos under the jets landing in the islands, 4,500 feet runway is entirely underwater in recent photos. The same photos show a thick layer of sand covering 30 feet of the runway overrun area. Winds reported at 185 miles per hour knocked down fences, destroyed the jetway, and heavily damaged objects through the window in the terminal. The terminal area forecast for the airport immediately prior to the storm advised pilots that they could expect winds from a heading of 300 at 440 knots and gusting to 160. See more in newsletter online August-December 17th.
Wow, that's some report, Chuck. Thank you. Hello, Eastern family. It's time for the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. We're coming to you live from several locations around the United States. That's right. Our regular hosts are located in Florida, in Georgia, in Colorado, New York, and Massachusetts. Hey, that's me up here. My name is Jim Hart, and along with our other hosts, we're glad you're with us. The show for you and about Eastern Airlines family. You know, there's one thing I have to tell you. I'm sitting here on my laptop radio, as my producer says, but I'll tell you, I'm waiting for Hurricane Jose to come and hit us tonight. We don't know what to expect, but there are at least maybe 100-mile-an-hour winds. And I've taken everything off my deck, and my automobile, my pickup truck are in the garage. And it's just one of those unusual things. Just a reminder how to go about signing in to our show and calling in if you have comments or if you want to sign in as host. Here's what you do. Go to www.ealradioshow.com and look for the radio icon on the home page. Click the arrow in the center at 7 p.m. and you can listen in on your computer. You can also tune in by going to blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. This site is a site of our provider, www.blogtalkradio. Now, there's an easier way, really, to get to us, and that's just by using your telephone and call us at 213-816-1611 at 7 o'clock in the evening. And you can sit there and listen to our program on the phone and join in the conversation if you have something that you'd like to say or something that you would want us to listen to. Neil, how about getting us into this episode on the air and with the new Eastern airplane, the Boeing 757?
Eastern's got the right time and the right place for you. Every day, every day, and Eastern plane around the way. The
Hello?
Hi, Dad. Are you and Mom watching TV?
Shay?
Yeah.
No, darling. No, darling. We're just having breakfast. Why? What's the matter? You sound upset.
Oh, gosh, Dad. Please just go turn on the TV. It's a plane, and it's crashed into New York City. It crashed into a building.
And, yes, we did turn on the television and watched and listened, as did millions of Americans and people around the world. America had just been attacked, and right here in America, we were watching the news when news anchors began recounting what they were watching in real time unveil on the New York skyline. Tell us how what might have been a private airplane crashing into the World Trade Center.
It appears that there is more and more fire and smoke enveloping the very top of the building. And as fire crews are descending on this area, it does not appear that there's any kind of an effort up there yet. Now remember, oh my God.
That looks like a second plane.
I did not see a plane go in. That just exploded.
We just saw another plane coming in from the side.
You did. That was out of my view.
Yes, and that's the second explosion. You could see the plane come in just from the right-hand side of the screen. So this looks like it is some sort of a concerted effort to attack the World Trade Center that is underway in downtown New York.
Did you hear the explosion from your position?
Yes, we did. As a matter of fact, we heard it and because I was just like standing there pretty much looking out the window. I didn't see what caused it or if there was an impact.
So you have no idea right now?
Oh, there's another one. Another plane just hit. Oh, my God. Another plane has just hit. It hit another building. Flew right into the middle of it. Explosion. My God, it's right in the middle of the building.
This one into the East Tower.
Yes. Yes. Right in the middle of the building. And right now... That was definitely looked like it was on purpose.
You saw a plane?
Yes, I just saw a plane go into the building.
As you look at the picture from our chopper now arriving at the scene, Jim Friedel in Hoboken said it appeared to bank sharply and smash directly, perhaps purposefully, into... Oh, my goodness.
Oh, God.
There's another one.
Oh,
my goodness, there's another one.
This seems to be on purpose.
Oh, my goodness.
Another
plane? Now it's obvious, I think, that there's a second plane just crashed into the World Trade Center. I think we have a terrorist act of proportions that we cannot begin to imagine at this juncture.
We'll try to get a better vantage point.
Tonight we remember the 16th year after September 11th, 2001. We've all just had one of the most horrific weeks in decades because of Hurricane Irma. As you know, our tribute for 9/11 was set for last Monday on 9/11, but because of circumstances beyond our control, we had to cancel that broadcast. But we decided to do the tribute tonight. We want to honor those who gave up their lives on that day, like Neil and his family, all of us. Listening and watching the news that morning, we're in absolute shock. Hearing the attack on our country, we could not take our eyes away from that second American Airlines jet as it crashed into the Twin Tower on the lower west side of Manhattan. And then later the same day, we heard our President Bush, George Bush, give the American people these words.
Well, Linda, George Bush addressed the nation that evening, and I was unable to put that sound clip into our program tonight. So would you please continue on?
Yeah. Well, before we ask our listeners how they remember this day, it is, as President Franklin Roosevelt so rightfully called that day when America declared war on Japan, 9/11 also is a date that will live in infamy. We had scheduled as our guest Captain Beverly Best, retired American Airlines. She had commitments that would not allow her to be with us tonight, Here are her words. I'm not sure there is a pilot around who does not remember where they were during 9/11. I was in Texas instructing in American Airlines simulators. And while this horrific event took the lives of many and changed the lives of everyone in the world, what it also did was show that when times are the most difficult, there's a goodness in the world, and human kindness will prevail. Today is the story of a retired captain, her life, and what happened during that fateful time. Just a short bio of Beverly that was found on Captain Carlene Petit's website titled How I, Beverly, Became a Pilot and What Happened During 9/11. It's titled Kitchen Counter. I don't really know what caused my fascination with flying, but I do know that I simply can't remember a time when I wasn't passionate about airplanes. I remember jumping off of the kitchen counter and wondering why I couldn't fly across the room. Of course, I always ended up in a heap on the kitchen floor. When I was around 8, my parents went on a weekend trip to Miami, and my Aunt Ginger was keeping me for that weekend. We were driving down the strip and saw a sign on the side of the road, and it said, airplane rides for a penny a pound. That was it. That was my chance to go flying, and all I needed to do was scourge up 3/4, and I was good to go. I begged, and I begged her to let me go, but she wouldn't because she was responsible for me while my parents were away. It would end up being the only argument she and I would ever have. Well, we're right over the middle of the North Atlantic when we get notified over the air-to-air frequency that one of the towers had been hit. And Captain Beverly Bass said on the Tonight Show, I'm flying a flight from Paris to Dallas, September 11, 2001, quote. But we went back to our business as usual, and then about 20 minutes later, we were notified the second tower had been hit, and with that came the word terrorism.
You may have heard this video sound clip, but we think it is appropriate to replay on this broadcast, and so we present it again tonight. We've done it in the past, and I think you'll be moved by this sound clip by Steve Scheibner. ...2,977 people died on 9/11/2001, just a week ago today, beginning with 87 lives.
On an emotional level, at first, it didn't really sink in. And I think a lot of people that are close to an event like that, you know, you're kind of in a sort of a dream state for a little bit. You're kind of trying to figure out what happened. And I finally started to piece it all together later on that evening.
And when he finally did get a hold of me, he just kept saying, it wasn't me. Don't worry, it wasn't me.
Well, I've been with American Airlines since 1991, so we're coming up on my 20th anniversary with American. I've been a pilot a little bit longer than that. I was first employed by the Navy. I flew P-3s out of Brunswick, Maine, and I was on active duty for 8 years. I got about 3,500 hours of P-3 time in those 8 years, and then I got hired by American Airlines, and currently I fly the Boeing 757 and 767 airplanes.
It's interesting because you don't know what's going to happen September 11th when you're living September 10th. And I just remember September 10th because September in New England is beautiful. It's not quite fall, but it's cooler than it would be other places. And I'd taken them to the library, and I was sitting outside drinking a coffee while they were in the library. And for the first time, really thanking the Lord because I felt safe. I thought, wow, we're all here, and it's safe, and what in the world could ever happen in Georgetown, Maine?
September 10th is a date that means, you know, a great deal to me because I did what I normally do on September 10th, the day before I become available to go flying, and my flying is in blocks of days of availability. So I was available to go flying on September 11th. So at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon on September 10th, I sat down at the computer and I logged in like I normally do and to check to see if there was any unassigned flying for the next day. And sure enough, there was one trip that was available on September 11th. It was American Airlines Flight 11 out of Boston's Logan Airport to Los Angeles. It was a two-day trip, got back on the second day. Left, I think, at about, I don't know, 7:40, 7:45 in the morning, something around that time frame. And I looked at it, and there was no pilot assigned to it yet. So the next thing that what I do is I go and check and see if there's any reserve pilots available. Now, I know I'm available, but there might be some other guys available. And it just so happened on September 11th, 2001, there was only one guy available to go flying on that day, and that was me. So I've been through this drill a lot of times over the years. I told my wife, I said, I'm going to Los Angeles tomorrow. I went out to the car and I opened up the trunk and I got my dirty luggage out of the trunk and I threw it in the wash machine and I packed my bags with the new clean stuff and took it back out to the car and I said, I'm going to L.A. And at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, in fact, in those days, what's called crew scheduling at American Airlines would actually assign my name to that trip.
I ironed his shirt, which I always do, and put his epaulets on his shoulder and found the ID and, you know, made sure he had everything packed he needed. And we just prepare. When you're a military family, you prepare in a certain way. When you're an airline family, it's the same thing. There's just a routine and kind of a checklist you go through to prepare for Dad to leave on a trip.
The final assignment comes via the phone call. So they make, you know, positive contact communication with you. It's not just in the computer. They'll call and they'll say, hey, want to let you know you've been assigned a trip. Now, I might know that already by looking into the computer. I could already see that. But a real person will call you and say, Scheibner, it's now your trip. And now at that point, once you have that phone conversation, even if a line pilot wants to, they can't bump you off that trip. So they've only got a 30-minute window of opportunity. Once that phone call gets made, it's a done deal. I waited for the phone call. And the phone never rang, which is not completely unusual. It's not the norm, but it's not completely out of the question either. In fact, I didn't even think about it for a while. It was later on that evening. I thought, hey, you know, they never assigned that trip to me. And then I really didn't give it another thought because, well, what that means is I still get paid, but I've got tomorrow off. I'm still available to go flying, but, you know, they never finalized an assignment. So I guess I can, you know, brush off my ambitions to do something else that day. What was taking place, was the fact that a fellow by the name of Tom McGinnis, who was one of those line-holding pilots, a little bit senior to me, Tom was celebrating his birthday on September 10th with his wife and his children. And Tom did what I did that afternoon, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He went over to the computer, and he logged in, and he looked, and he saw that flight was open, but my name had been penciled in. And he knew he was still in that 30-minute window of opportunity. So Tom called down to American Airlines and said, hey, you know, I just want to check with you. Am I legal to take this trip? In other words, can I bump Scheibner off that trip? And they did what they do with the computer down there, and they got back to him and said, yep, you're legal for that trip, but you got to give us a call back in the next, you know, 20 minutes, or else we're going to finalize the assignment. I assume that Tom had some sort of conversation with his wife, and he called back. He called American Airlines, and he said, yeah, I'll take that trip. So at that moment, they erased my name off the trip. They assigned it to Tom. I didn't know any different because they never called. And Tom showed up for work that day on September 11th. As you recall, on the East Coast, it was a beautiful day that day. They pushed back off the gate on time, and they took off on time. And Tom was actually flying. It was his leg to Los Angeles that day. And they flew up to about 23,000 feet, and Tom engaged the autopilot to take him the rest of the way to Los Angeles. And at that moment, all hell broke loose on the airplane. I mean, there's not another way to express it.
The cockpit's not answering. Somebody's stabbed in business class. And I think there's mates that we can't breathe. I don't know. I think we're getting hijacked. Which flight is it?
Flight 12.
Flight 12. Okay.
No, we're on flight 11 right now. This is flight 11.
It's flight 11. I'm sorry, Nitty.
Boston to Los Angeles.
Yes.
And what seat are you in? Ma'am, are you there?
Yes.
What seat are you in?
Ma'am, what seat are you in?
We just left Boston. We're up in the air.
I know.
We're supposed to go to L.A., and the cockpit's not answering their phone.
Okay, but what seat are you sitting in? What's the number of your seat?
Okay, I'm in my jump seat right now.
Okay.
At 3R.
Okay, you're the flight attendant?
Our number one has been stabbed, and our five has been stabbed. Can anybody get up to the cockpit? Can anybody get up to the cockpit? Okay, we can't even get into the cockpit. We don't know who's up there. Is anybody still there?
Yes, we're still here.
Okay. I'm staying on the line as well.
Okay.
What's going on, honey? Okay, the aircraft is erratic again. It's bothering me.
Very erratic.
Betty, talk to me. Betty, are you there? Betty?
Have a TV on. I didn't have a radio on. We were just doing our schoolwork, and pretty soon the head contractor called me. His guys had called him because they realized that Steve wasn't home, and he called me and said, you know, where is Steve today? And I said, well, he's in at the Navy. He had gone to work for the Navy that day since he didn't get an airline trip. And the problem with the contractors was they were scared. They thought he had been on that flight and they were going to be dealing with this distraught woman who had just lost her husband.
It really started to come home to me, the emotional gravity of what happened when my cell phone started to ring. But a secretary at a school that I used to attend looked at my cell phone number, and she was the first person to call. And I answered the phone, and Evie was on the end of the phone, and she heard my voice, and she started crying. And when she started crying, I started crying. And she was just happy to hear my voice. And it wasn't 2 minutes after I got off with her that somebody else called, friends of ours from down in Texas. And I thought, you know, I need to get ahead of this and make some phone calls. So I called home and I called to different places. I still didn't realize that that was the flight that I was supposed to be on. You know, I'm watching it on TV like everybody else. And it didn't click with me. I knew the flight number and everything. It still didn't click with me. When it finally clicked with me was later on that evening. I thought, you know, I wonder who was on that flight. And I thought, well, maybe I can go find out the names, because the media wasn't going to give you the names for a few days. But maybe there's a way through the login process at American to find out the names. And so I did. I did what I did the day before on September 10th. I logged in. And when the screen came up in front of me, it looked exactly like it did the day before when it had that trip and it had my name penciled in. Except this time, it had this trip sequence. My name wasn't there, and it said these three words: sequence failed continuity. That's code at the airlines for the trip never made it to its destination. Wow, what an understatement. Sequence failed continuity. And at that moment, when I got that visual look at the screen, I was overwhelmed. I said, you know what? I packed my bags to go on that trip. And then I was even more curious at who had bumped me. But the words can't describe that moment of realizing that you should have been someplace. You asked me about guilt a little while ago. Yeah, you do have a twinge of guilt. 20 years ago, I wrote a life objective. And my life objective goes like this. It's to seek, trust, and glorify God through humble service and continual prayer, to raise up qualified disciples as quickly as possible, so that someday I might hear God say, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." The events of September 11th took that life objective that I already had, and it intensified it for me. The fire just keeps getting hotter as I get older. But someday I want to stand in the Lord's presence and I want Him to say, "Well done." I would hate to get in God's presence and have Him say, "Oh, yeah, Scheibner, I see your name's down here. Well, you know, have a seat. I need to hear the Lord say, well done, my good and faithful servant. That's what's on my plate, and that's what's driving me these days. Why does God take one and leave another? It's not because I'm a better person or God wanted to do more with me than he wanted to with Tom. I think in God's providence, that's obviously his choice. What has stuck with me all these years is the fact that he did leave me behind, is that I need to act like I'm living on borrowed time, because I am. I can look and see my smoking hole, and it was on national TV, and I saw where I should have died, but I didn't. And now there's an obligation that comes with that. I've got to live my days with a sense of urgency. I have to make sure I get the most out of them, not the most for me. I think we live in a world where everybody's kind of out to get the most for them. This is not about me. This is about the distinct privilege I've been given to know that somebody died in my place. What I know is that somebody died in my place not once, but twice. That's where God comes into the whole thing for me. See, Tom sat in a seat that I was qualified to sit in. And by all rights, that was my seat that day. I should have been in that seat. In fact, I've sat in the very seat of that airplane that Tom was in. I've flown all of the 757s and 767s American Airlines own. So I know what it's like literally to sit in that seat. But I am still, all these years later, still qualified to sit in that seat. And I could have. But Tom didn't die for my sins. You see, God sent his own son to die for my sins. Jesus Christ was the other one who died in my place, and he hung, and he bled, and he suffered on a cross to pay a price for me that I wasn't qualified to pay. I couldn't have hung on the cross. I didn't have the same qualifications. So one guy sat in a seat that I should have sat in. The other hung and bled on a cross. One is far more significant than the other. That's not to trivialize what happened to Tom. It's to elevate and glorify what God did for me and, you know, for mankind on the cross.
The show is now open to any callers that would like to make a comment. I have all the microphones muted, so I'm going to open them one by one. And if you'd like to share your remembrance of 9/11, we'd love to hear from you. And so just step up to your microphone, which is your telephone, and identify yourself and say what you want to say as far as 9/11, which we had to delay this broadcast for 1 week, but we felt strongly about presenting it tonight. So all microphones are open. Anyone would like to make a comment, just go ahead.
Neil, this is Jim.
Jim, hello.
On that very day, I mentioned to my wife that I wanted to take her to Canada. She had never been up to the Montreal area. So we left here on the island of Martha's Vineyard. And we started driving east, and we went to the little town of Popham Beach, Maine. It's just south of Bath. Because my wife wanted to pick up some stones on the beach. And while she was on the beach picking up stones, I was in the car listening to the radio. And that's when I heard what was happening. She came back to the car and I said, you can't believe what I've just heard. So she listened. I said, listen, I have some friends right nearby. Maybe they have the whole thing on television. So I went over, and sure enough, we all had a cup of coffee, and we watched the television with what had happened. And it was unbelievable. We just couldn't believe it. We continued up through the center of Maine, and we went into Canada in the town of Jackman, Maine. And the, would you believe, the security guard, he was Canadian. And he said, I'm sorry to tell you, folks, I'm so sorry to hear what's happened in your country. And I'll never, ever forget that. We continued on our trip, and that was it. But it was I'll never, ever forget that time on September 11th. Thank you, Neil.
Thanks, Jim. And we all have our remembrance as to how we first heard about it. And you heard how I heard about it, my wife, when our daughter called on the phone to tell us about it, which I had her to repeat that earlier in the program. But we were hoping to have Captain, now retired Captain Beverly Bass, that was the first officer on the flight from Paris to New York, and her story was received, and they have a Broadway play now about her experience on that flight landing in Gander. No aircraft, of course, as you remember, were allowed to come into the country, and all the aircraft inbound from different countries were diverted to other airports. But we did a story, I think, about 4 years ago, and we read a story about, I think it was a Delta captain, that was in the same area, I guess, because he, too, landed in Gander. And he told his story about how well he was treated there by those from Gander, the residents of Gander, and how they took all the passengers and the crews into their homes and took care of them for the days that they were there. And Beverly told that story so well that it is now a Broadway play. So one of these days, perhaps we can get Beverly to come on the show and tell us that story. I was, like I say, I was hoping that she'd be on tonight, but she had other obligations. And she was ready to go last week when Hurricane Irma came through, so we were saddened by that. But any other remembrances from any of our hosts or listeners? All the microphones are on.
Well, if you guys can hear me, Neil, it's Ken. Everybody,
good evening. Hey, hi, Ken. Welcome to a show tonight. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, guys. Sure, I can't help it. And I just want to comment with the gentleman's name was that Steve, Captain.
Steve Scheibner. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Scheibner.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
What a wonderful testimony and story. That's really heart touching. I'm definitely going to replay that. My wife's going to love to hear that. For me, it happened at 5:50 a.m., right? Because we were in Seattle. And my wife actually came in and woke me up, right, at 5:45 in the morning and said that, you know, this was taking place. I wasn't used to getting up at that time. We had a neighbor come over and say that that had happened. And my, if you will, personal experience with it is in 93, three was my one and only time to New York in 1993. My wife's from the island and lived in Manhattan for 8 years. She worked for GQ magazine. She was an accessories editor. So she took me about New York, and we get to see some of my favorite, what I always wanted to go see, different places.
Okay.
Actually, a lot of places I didn't get to go because Bin Laden did his first round of attacks, if you remember that. We were there when that happened, right? The day we went downtown, we just had lunch and we went back home to the island. And then on the way back, we could see the smoke coming up on the horizon, and that's when he did this. Well, we went down the next day. I got these photos of all these canary yellow expired fire packs that the firefighters had used underneath of Tower 1, because he and his cronies went in and tried to do the first explosion. And I'll never forget, you know, you're talking about somebody that's from a farm in Maryland where my dad, when he flew for Eastern, never been to a big city like that at least, stood back and I looked up at that building and I thought to myself, I thought, oh my God, oh my gosh, they tried to bring this thing down. Well, when I was watching the TV that day and I watched that thing collapse when it finally did, that's what came through my mind. And you know what, guys? It's the only time in my life I've ever taken my hand and put it up to my mouth. It must be a psychological thing, I guess, or a reaction. The other thing is this, perhaps you guys know, this wasn't too long after I had separated with my back surgery from Alaska Airlines, but I was out, and I had come home, and does anybody on the other end here know the name Dave Whitman?
No.
Sorry, no.
Okay, no biggie. Don't worry, guys. Well, Dave Whitman was with Eastern for many years. He was in charge of the Boeing 727 training department in Miami for years, and he knew my dad. But he may have gone down with the airline, I don't know. But I first soloed around 1990, about right before Eastern dissolved, sadly. And Dave became an examiner for the FAA. There was two others in this area here on this coast over here, Neil. There was Bill Leslie and there was Richard Hirsch out of Lakeland. At any rate, all the kids in our academy, when I became an instructor here at Sarasota, Florida Flight Academy, were all European students, and they came here because it's so expensive to fly in Europe. So they would come here, and we had them from Germany and some Middle Eastern, and we had, you know, people from all over coming here, or they went to Venice and they got there because they came over for those package deals. You could get your MEL, your multi-engine land, and your two-year degree. They had package deals where they put them up for berthing and so on and so forth. Well, Dave did most of his examining. I did my CFI through him because there was only one other guy in the state that could give them in 1993 when I got mine, because some student pilots had killed themselves on base to final. So they pulled all these examiners that did CFIs except for Bill Leslie and Dave Whitman. So I went down there, and it was called Huffman Aviation at Venice Flying Service. I got my MEL, my MEI, and my ATP with Dave Whitman. And this was, again, 1993. Well, we all know that was 2001. I came home in Seattle. I was out running some errands, and my wife goes, "Hey, Dave Whitman was on the news." And I said, "What?" And he was on King 5 News. Dave Whitman had signed off Mohammed Atta's ticket. So that's how close those guys were to me. Yeah, they were all through Venice here and in Sarasota, and that's where they learned to fly. So that's my personal experience with 9/11, and it just made the hair come up on my neck when I found out about all this. But at any rate, I'm rambling. That's my experience with 9/11, and my heart goes out to all those people. I had friends also that were hired by both. Phil Mayer went to United. Rex Llewellyn from Mesa Airlines and the commuter when I was a captain on went to American. American, as you know, didn't open their hiring base until about 99 or 2000, and then they had 15,000 applications on their desk. Cecil Ewald did in the Dallas-Fort Worth chief pilot, because they weren't opening to hiring any pilots for like 9 or 11 years, a really long time. And there was a $100 non-refundable application fee, so a lot of people were hesitant. They were desperate to get out of the commuters. But I did it anyway, too, but very few got called. So, and I know a few other pilots, but Phil Mayer and numerous other ones I could name now. And that's the first thing I did is I got on the horn because I wanted to know in my own heart that they were not on board those planes.
Ken, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
You're welcome, Neil.
And
Ken, you were not rambling.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Dorothy. Yes.
It's Linda. One thing that came to me was that Americans, when that first plane went in, we thought, how could that happen? How could somebody make that mistake. We don't think like a terrorist. I don't think anybody really thought that was terrorism, because we don't think like that. We just that's beyond our scope of mentality, and then we had to face reality. But I was so happy that Americans, we thought, how could they make that big mistake? We didn't think of what really happened, but something that really that was so horrific, and I know, I agree, we couldn't stop watching in awe, and it kept hitting us harder and harder. But my son just has, in the last couple of years, been through training, for firefighter training, and I've taken those people for granted all my life. I just, first responders, I just knew they'd be there. I hate to say it, but I just kind of took him for granted, and I don't do it anymore, because with him going through training, he has brought the equipment that they wear on their back. He has shown me all the, he studied and overstudied, and he practiced, I mean, everything. It's just, he said, Mom, I respect those men. He said, I hold the door open for them. And so that came back to me about 9/11, how they were carrying that heavy equipment, trudging up the stairs. And what I heard was that they were telling the police, get out of here. You get out of here. We're here. We're going to do it. We got our equipment. You get out. So they were shooing the police out of it, and they were going to take care of it. And that, it just keeps coming back to me. It hurts you all the time. Yeah.
Well, we've got 941. I believe that's up in Canada. We have a Canadian caller.
Okay, Neil, I'm sorry. I got an area code of 941 over here in Sarasota.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's 519. Excuse me, Ken. 519.
Yes, sir.
I think I might know who this caller is from Canada, London, Canada. Oh, just chopped off. I was going to ask about the Canadian operations of Eastern and during that time, and just dropped off my producer's board here. Any other comments about 9/11? Okay. Dorothy is with her husband, Don. And Don, of course, as most of you know, is a host with us every Monday, faithfully. And so is Dorothy. And Dorothy, of course, does the website, a brilliant job doing the website. Dorothy took Don to the hospital, and they're running some tests on him. He was pretty weak this morning. I talked to her last night. And she said he didn't feel any better. She was taking him to the doctors, so they decided to put him in the hospital and do some tests on Don. So I'm sorry that Dorothy's not with us, but she's with her husband, and that's where she should be. And Don, we wish you a speedy recovery, and we'll be talking with you, Dorothy, very soon. Since Dorothy is not able to give you the programs or topics that we're going to be doing in the future, because I usually at this time ask her to give us an update as to what our programs will be in the near future. And next Monday, the 25th of September, we'll be doing a tribute to Captain Steve Thompson, who was with our show for about 4 years, maybe even five. We're going into our eighth year now. And Steve, of course, passed away a few months ago, and we're doing an honor, a tribute to Steve on September the 25th, and that is episode 334. And hopefully we'll have his family and talk about Steve. October the 2nd, we've got a program, a special program with the Silver Liners, and they have people that will be telling us about what they're doing now after Eastern folded. And so tune in. If you're a flight attendant, you want to hear some of your colleagues and interviewed by another flight attendant. And that will be October the 2nd. And then October the 9th, we have the Atlanta exhibit, The Wings of Man, at the Georgia State University, has set up a exhibit, and they've got a lot of memorabilia, an exhibit of the Wings of Man about Eastern Airlines. And we hope to have two folks that will talk about that. And it's, I think, going to be open, the exhibit, until June. So we want to hear all about that in Atlanta. And then October the 16th, put together a piece of paper, well, actually a document that was several pages long. I know when I appeared on that list, I was like about 2,224. And that was back in early 1963, and it was called the seniority list. And every pilot had that seniority list in their flight bag. So we're going to talk about the seniority list and how it affected many of us, not only pilots, but the maintenance folks had their own seniority list, and other the flight attendants had their seniority list. So we're going to talk about seniority list on October 16th. October 23rd, haven't really come up with an idea for a show for that date. That's October 23rd. So if any of you listeners have any thoughts along those lines that you think that we ought to do a show, then we'd be happy to hear what the topic would be. Just make some suggestions to us. Just go to host@EALradioshow.com and just give us a suggestion. You can email us at host@EALradioshow.com. So October 23rd is a mystery to even me, but we'd like to have you guys thinking about filling that slot. Then October 30th is Halloween, actually 31st, I believe it is, but Halloween skit will be done, and it's going to be one that we did several years ago. And it goes into the Bermuda Triangle, so we'll have fun doing that with some different cast, a little different cast, some of us still around that we can be in that skit. So that takes us through October, and you've got some topics that you want us to consider, then we'd be happy to do so. Let's see, that's about all I've got, I guess. Anyone else have any comments to make before we put the airplane down on the ground?
Yeah, hey, I just want to say a big shout out to Jim. Jim, I'm glad to hear you're feeling better, so you're back. Good, Jim.
Yeah, thank you.
Amen, Jim. And you got the hatch battened down, right? Battened down the hatch? You got it.
Wow, yeah. In fact, everything is pulled in from outside. We're expecting 80 plus mile an hour winds beginning late tonight or early tomorrow morning. And for a future program, Neil, I think I would like to offer something about those of us who were retained on the airline. We were paid, but we were brought into New York City to keep in touch with congressmen and senators and travel agents during a couple of our real lengthy work stoppage or strikes. And in my own case, I have kind of a funny thing that happened during one of those times, and I'd like to share it with our listeners.
Very good, Jim. We'll certainly, I'll get with you, and we'll talk about that, and perhaps we can bring it live on the air and talk
good
about that. Yeah, always
good
want to talk about on our shows, on our broadcast, Eastern Airlines. And what we did and our memories, and we want to share them with all of our listeners. Any other thoughts about the hurricane and what you how you survived it? I know I was trapped in my subdivision for 4 days because of high waters, and I couldn't get my car through the streets, and so I got cabin fever about the fourth day so bad that I called on my friend Emery, and Emery came and rescued me and took me down to Home Depot, where I rented a two-bedroom moving van by Penske. So I was able to go right through. I was able to go right through that water. I think I could have pulled water skiers behind me, but it did give me the freedom that I needed. Plus, it also allowed my wife to go shopping at Publix, and so we got through that. But some of us, like Linda, I believe you were without power for days. Were you not?
Yeah.
How does one do that? Do you have candles? How did you do that, Linda? Tell us how you operate without electricity.
We did. We had candles and matches. We found matches and I didn't want any doors open. He would open doors during the day, but we had lizards in here and frogs in here and one time a snake in here. And I said, I wasn't going to go unconscious with the doors open. So
oh, golly.
Pretty hot.
And Ken, you were there in Sarasota, were you not? How about your area, neck of the woods? Have you received any major water damages and so forth?
I was here, yes, sir, and I'm very blessed that just in that small town of, thank God, I mean, I love Sarasota. I lived there for 17 years, but I wasn't there. I was in Bradenton because, you know, the further north that went, and even 10, 20 miles makes a difference. Sarasota got hammered. We didn't get, for example, I see a neurologist because I've had back problems my whole life, but I got numbness in my right arm. I've been seeing a doctor for a while, and I tried to call him today because I need to get a shot in my neck, and they said he still doesn't have electricity. So they're a lot worse off down there than we are, but we weathered it. We had a family here, a really wonderful, wonderful lady named Gwen that took in the homeless. So me and my wife and my special needs brother-in-law and my son all shacked up over there because we were without power for almost 5 days. So Robbie can't afford to get overheated. He'll end up in the hospital. So she was really great. She's a wonderful gal. She's been down here for years, and it has. It's been a learning process for all of us. And now, as we all know, Maria, I don't know what you guys are doing right now, but I'm talking to y'all, but I'm looking at Maria on the computer, and they're tracking it. Perhaps you guys know it's a level 3. It's coming up on Puerto Rico, and, you know, we're just praying it doesn't come this way. But I've looked into generators, too, guys. They say it takes a 14,000 generator to 14,000 to run an AC system. So from generic, I'm really thinking of actually having them drop that off. They're saying they can have it here by next Monday, and I need a 12-volt battery and get it hooked up because I'm a fool for not doing that earlier. I really should have done that, and it's a good selling point for the house. But I want to we weathered it, and everybody in the neighborhood, you know, Duke Energy and TECO, you know, Tampa Electric Company and Florida Power and Light, they were all, you know, when the trucks finally pulled up, everybody was running out, you know, and thanking them, and it was weird, you know. And you guys all saw Key West and Cujo Key. I mean, they got hammered, but finally, when they hooked up everybody's electricity here, we were able to actually breathe a little. But glad to hear you guys made it through as well.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Chuck, go ahead. Linda, go ahead.
I said I want a generator. I want one.
Okay. All right. Hey, I want to look into it also. I was looking at them when I rented that Penske truck at Home Depot, and they were out, of course. The ones I was looking at were in for repair. But I could see where I could put it right in my garage. You can't put it in your house, of course. And I guess that you should run it outside outside. Let's see. I've got someone else that popped up here. Oh, Chuck, the villages. How
well,
did the villages
fare?
Well,
I just wanted to add to it that all these years I've been trying to convince you people to come to the villages. And I really suffered. I was out of power for 58 minutes. And and then there was only 2 inches of water in the street, and then it evaporated about 2 hours after the storm passed.
We don't want to hear that. We do not want to hear that.
No.
But and now I'm like you guys. I ordered one of those outside generators.
Oh my goodness!
Okay.
That you get at Home Depot.
Yeah.
Right. How can I get to the villages?
But no, you just get it. You if you're coming from up north, you get on 75 and come to Wildwood. If you're down south. You come on 75 and come north and get off at Wildwood.
Okay. Yeah.
It's right in the center of the state. It's 70 miles north of Orlando and all those things up there that they have. And one of the calling cards that we have here is we got 53 golf courses.
All
but
right.
Most of them right underwater.
Underwater.
Chuck, do I understand that your old buddy, Jack Daniels, was helping you during this conflict?
No, my doctor won't let me go out with Jack Daniels anymore, but he had a buddy that we got. He's you go to Joe's up there in the Gainesville, and you buy these cases of wine at $2 Chuck. You ever heard of $2 Chuck?
No.
I'll tell you that story sometime, but I got about
all right.
10 cases of wine in my pantry.
Thank you, Chuck.
Well,
thank you.
I'm going to see if the captain will land the airplane right about now, okay? All right.
Sounds good.
Great landing, great landing, Captain Steve. Oh, God. Drop my paper. Mr. Producer, another outstanding job on the board. You know, it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines and the place we worked and stories we shared. We feel we've truly earned the title of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines, and it's all because of you, our callers, our listeners, our guests, our hosts, our sponsor, REPA, the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. All of you, we really love you. We look forward to our Eastern family and friends joining us again on September 25th. When we honor one of our own, Captain Steve Thompson, a dedicated Eastern Airlines employee, EAL radio show host, and a great friend to all of us. Until then, we all say good night, Eastern. We love
good
you,
night.
Eastern.
Good night, Eastern. We love you.
Good night, Eastern. Love you.
Good night.